Okay, Ms. Landau, when you're ready.
Please the court. Sarah Beth Landau for Javier Madrigal. The issue before the court is whether there was sufficient reasonable suspicion of criminal activity to justify the continued detention of Mr. Madrigal after the traffic stop in this matter was complete. The short answer here is no. The court's inquiry here is fairly narrow. Mr. Madrigal is not challenging the basis for the stop, nor is he challenging that once the search of the car was completed, that there was probable cause to detain him. Instead, he's focused on a very narrow window of when the traffic stop was completed and the detention was continued.
So what was before the officer at the time before the computer checks are done and he hasn't answered about the California arrest record? What specifically did the officer have?
Your Honor, when asked that question by the district court, Deputy Tooman said that Mr. Madrigal was taking an indirect route from McAllen or Reynosa to Houston, and that he was avoiding drug interdiction efforts on Highway 59, that Mr. Madrigal was driving, in the trooper's words, a mid-model vehicle. I think he meant an older model vehicle that was newly purchased, had a new registration. We don't actually know the details in the record of how new is newly registered, but the vehicle was a 1996 or a 1999 model. Mr. Madrigal had multiple border crossings. He lives in the McAllen-Reynosa area.
He wasn't able to give give the address of his destination in Houston, right?
He was not able to give the address. He didn't actually include that factor when the district court asked him, but he had testified to that earlier.
Well, isn't that kind of a big deal? I mean, you've got somebody sort of driving up to Houston to meet a friend, has no idea where he's going. Houston's a big place. He's just going to drive around Houston hoping to find his friend among several million people?
No, Your Honor. There's one thing I was about to address, which is I think that some of the communication issues between the trooper and Mr. Madrigal are due to a language barrier. If you review the stop, there are no fewer than four or five instances where Mr. Madrigal is trying to communicate with the trooper, show him something, and he begins speaking in Spanish. And one of those times was when he was trying to explain where he was going. And he handed Deputy Tooman a business card that indicated he was trying to go to an auction. And he had the phone number of his friend, and I certainly have done this before, where I know what exit to take, and then the person who I'm meeting will just give me an address. That's not that strange in this day and age where people have cell phones and can communicate.
So the business card showed the auction location, or?
No, it showed his workplace location. He was trying
his meeting Madrigal or the friend?
Mr. Madrigal.
Okay, so how was the trooper to know this thing that you said, that he's going to do this exit and all this stuff?
Just common sense training and experience, Your Honor. It's
well, isn't it also common sense that he's going to an address to transmit drugs and he doesn't want to tell the trooper that? I mean, so if we're just going to make inferences based on not knowing where I'm going in Houston, why isn't that a reasonable inference?
Well, I'm not sure that we can even say for sure that he did not know where he was going in Houston. The communication barrier with the language issue was significant. So it might have been more probative had the deputy and Mr. Madrigal been communicating coherently in the same language. But that really wasn't what was happening.
Didn't he say he planned to return from Houston the same day, make a round trip to Houston?
Correct, Your Honor. With what he had said, he was going to pick up he was going to go look at a car, is what he said in Spanish.
Wasn't that suspicious? I mean, what would that distance have been?
It's somewhere between 6 and 7 hours each way. It's certainly possible to do a one-day trip. If you don't have a lot of money, that's cheaper than staying in Houston.
But see, the thing is, this isn't like beyond a reasonable doubt, where other innocent explanations kind of carry the day. Here, the question is, was this conduct consistent with it being suspicious? is that a reasonable suspicion, the totality of all of this stuff? And so I guess what I'm saying is, to me, the weirdest thing is, yes, I understand language barriers, but the kind of where are you going, both in Spanish and English, is a fairly easy thing to say. It seems like the trooper knew a little Spanish. So if he had an exit in mind, you know, he could have said it in Spanish or English, you know, exit 300 or whatever.
That assumes he understood the question appropriately, or that he knew the...
Well, he obviously conveyed that he didn't know where he was going in Houston. So given that, I mean, if he had an exit, or, you know, he could say, you know, Main Street or Louisiana Street or some street, or even say in Spanish, you know, exit Trescientos, or, you know, some, I mean, something. That doesn't seem to be even that degree of knowledge. And like I said, Houston's just a really big place to just suddenly drive to.
Do we know he had a, do he have a smartphone with him? Is that in the
That's record? Not in the record one way or the other, but I don't know if I know anybody who doesn't have a
I'm
smartphone.
Just curious.
It doesn't.
Because I'm just thinking from experience, you know, we use common sense sometimes, that I went to a place just last week where I didn't know at all where I was going. I just was getting to the town, and then when I got to the town, I use the phone to try to figure out where to go in the town. But as was pointed out earlier, it's only reasonable suspicion, not beyond a reasonable doubt. So
of course, Your Honor, but in similar cases, that this sort of odd travel situation has not been held to be reasonable suspicion. There's just not a lot here that, as I noted in my 28J letter, are not just profiling factors. There's got to be some information that is particular to Mr. Madrigal, and given the language barrier, they're not knowing the address is not especially probative. And in cases that I cited in my brief, such as Jones or Dortch, these sort of, well, that seems strange kind of things that are not tied to criminal activity, just sort of, that's odd. Those are insufficient to generate reasonable suspicion to detain somebody after the traffic stop has been completed.
Let me ask you this. Now, the officer could also consider what he learned when he checked with the dispatcher, could he not?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the main fact to me that he learned was that he had a 14-year-old drug arrest.
There is a prior arrest in this court's case in Jones, 234 F3rd 234. The arrest alone does not amount to reasonable suspicion.
Well,
and it's so
I understand that, but it seems like it's pretty important.
If it were recent, it might be more important, but a 14-year-old conviction for possession or manufacture is so vague as to be.
Was it a conviction or an arrest?
Arrest.
Advised of.
Okay.
But doesn't the record many times show arrest when it actually is a conviction?
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor.
Can we consider that fact? Wasn't that after the time period by which the dog detention had been? I thought that the California arrest record information was made after the computer checks were completed.
It was, Your Honor.
And so we can't consider that.
But it was part of the computer check, right?
Arguably, it could be part of the computer check. I think the
right, but the computer check's too late, too. We can't consider the computer check.
Well,
can we? Or maybe, I mean,
I think that the deputy does have the ability to get the result of the computer check. What's definitely
okay.
Not
so we
okay.
Can consider the computer
check. We can consider the computer check, but what's definitely impermissible is the follow-up questioning that followed the computer check, where the deputy said, oh, you're lying, you know, you said you didn't go to jail for it. So we actually don't know whether he was lying or whether he was telling the truth, because we don't have that information in the record about whether he, quote-unquote, went to jail for that drug arrest.
But if we can consider the computer check, then some follow-up questions about a computer check that comes back positive seems to be reasonable.
If you have reasonable suspicion at that point, Your Honor, yes, that would be the case. But there wasn't reasonable suspicion at that point. Macias indicates that those kinds of questions about criminal background are related to drug interdiction or generalized criminal activity, not about the traffic stop. So unless the traffic stop can continue, those kinds of questions, after the Supreme Court's decision in Rodriguez and after this court's decision in Macias, those questions are not related to the traffic stop and are impermissible unless there is pre-existing reasonable suspicion.
For you to win, do we have to find that any findings are clearly erroneous?
No, Your Honor. This is a question of law.
So there's nothing that the district court found during the hearing that is a stumbling block for you?
No, Your Honor. The district court's findings were pretty truncated. It was just a paragraph saying this and this and this. We all know what this kind of car means in South Texas. That's reasonable suspicion. That's the full extent. There were really no factual findings. It was just a pure legal application, so there really is no barrier.
So it's different than some of these other hearings that we see?
Correct, Your Honor. I think it's worth talking for a moment about the officer's experience in this case, which the government relies on to a great extent. Deputy Tooman is from a small sheriff's office in Fayette County, Texas. He had no experience with this method of transporting drugs. I think that some of his experience can be questioned by his judgment in this case. For example, it didn't seem like he knew that it only added half an hour to travel via I-10 versus Highway 59.
But why would you do that? Why would you? What was it? What is an innocent reason to take I-10, take a route that takes longer to your destination?
There, for example, are two routes to Austin. There are people who prefer one route over the other, though on it may take slightly longer. It's more scenic.
So on the way.
So I-10 is scenic?
You take the one way there and you take 290 back when you drive Austin the same day, like.
Yes, Your Honor.
Like I do when I go to Austin. I drive the I-10 way and then I come back on the 290 way.
Or you think one way may have less traffic than the other. Okay. There are any number of. It's such a.
Never noticed I-10 to be particularly scenic.
Well, not I-10, but
going through Marble Falls on the way to
71 or whatever. What is it that you? It doesn't matter, but it's.
The court understands my point, which is it's such a negligible amount. It's not adding 2 hours, which would certainly be suspicious. It adds half an hour, and if you look at the video, there's no traffic on I-10 at that time.
So even would it be reasonable to say I want to avoid these drug interdiction stops on 59? Even though I'm not a drug dealer, just because it's a hassle to have to deal with that. And is that a reason? Because that's going to add time to my trip.
Well,
even if he did know about that, that doesn't make it. If he's a Mexican national who doesn't speak English well, does he want to have to go through the hassle of that, even if he's law-abiding?
It certainly is a hassle. I mean, it wound up being a two-hour delay with, you know, still not finding the drugs after a roadside search of an hour, after going to 20 miles to Weimar, Texas to be put on the lift and another hour search. I mean, that certainly would be.
I think the question is more pointed to if you know there's a checkpoint, for example, and you just are like, I don't want to sit there and have to pull out my lot. I mean, I'm not doing anything wrong, but I just don't want to go through a checkpoint. I'd rather just cruise down this highway where I can go 70 miles an hour and not go through a checkpoint. I think that's what she's saying is just.
Of course.
Is that legitimate? But again, you get back to the reasonable suspicion. I mean, you don't have to negate every possible innocent motive in order for there to be reasonable suspicion.
Certainly, but a half an hour difference is certainly much more understandable than
I get that.
You said, which is 2 hours.
I get that.
And why didn't he field test the dirty fuel the minute he saw it? If he thought the fuel was, there was something off about it, why not just field test it right there?
Best case.
I think. As to reasonable suspicion, there's sort of a constellation of them. I think that Jones is very helpful. I think Macias is extremely helpful. The Supreme Court's decision in Rodriguez and probably Santiago as well. These are all cited in my brief in my Rule 28J letter. But, and also, the trooper, there's a lot of reasonable suspicion factors that were pointed to in his testimony that he didn't follow up on with Mr. Madrigal to try and get some clarity about it, to dispel that suspicion. And in Macias, the court criticized the trooper in that case for failing to kind of follow up and ask questions about things. And so things were left to kind of be confusing or suspicious looking when, in fact, there were reasonable explanations for them. And that also, to me, points to a lack of training and experience in terms of trying to dispel suspicion as quickly as possible and get a person who would be innocent in another case.
There's no audio in the stop.
Sorry, Your Honor?
There's a camera. There's video, but no audio, right?
There is both video and audio.
There is audio.
If there is a problem with what the court has, we'll certainly make arrangements to get you a proper copy, but there should be both. And I think also the route is a bit of a red herring because either he's on 59, which is a major drug trafficking route, or he's on I-10 and he's avoiding a major trafficking route. You're kind of darned if you do and darned if you don't.
It's that thing that I think in that case that Judge Wiener has, where if you look at the officer, you're and make eye contact, you're guilty, and if you don't make eye contact, you're guilty, and it's that's the point you're making.
Yes, Your Honor. I see my time is up. We would request that the court vacate Mr. Madrigal's conviction and sentence.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Ms. Mitchell.
May it please the court, Carmen Mitchell representing the United States. In this case, the district court did not err in denying Madrigal's motion to suppress the evidence. This court, pursuant to United States versus Arevizo, will look, when reviewing the factors supporting reasonable suspicion, will look to a totality of the circumstances. That is, this court under Lopez Moreno and Arevizo will not look at each factor individually or in isolation, but rather will look at the situation as a whole. Under the second prong of the Terry stop standard, the detention for a traffic stop must be temporary and last no longer than necessary to effectuate the purpose of the stop. If an officer may prolong the detention if additional reasonable suspicion is developed during the initiation of the stop and before the initial purpose of the stop has been fulfilled. And that occurred in the present case. In the present case, this was a traffic stop along I-10 and between San Antonio and Houston, and within the first 4 minutes after the initiation of this traffic stop, Deputy Thuman knew that Madrigal had a Mexican driver's license, did not have a Texas driver's license, that Madrigal was driving from Reynosa, Mexico to Houston on what he said was a one-day trip. However, he didn't take the direct route to Houston. He instead was taking I-10, which did add additional time to his trek on this one-day trip. Not only that, Madrigal didn't know exactly where he was going, and he did understand when Deputy Thuman asked where he was going. Madrigal said the address, so he understood the questions that were posed of him. Granted, he did respond to a question or two in Spanish. That can be seen and heard on the audio of the traffic stop. And as Deputy Thuman testified, that could have been several factors because there didn't seem to be this barrier or language barrier. It could have been a hesitation on Madrigal's part on how to respond. Perhaps he didn't want to respond, or perhaps he didn't know the exact address location yet. All of these factors, including the fact that Madrigal was driving this old model truck with new vehicle registration, all added to the reasonable suspicion.
I'm just trying to understand why that, I mean, I just heard on the radio, for what it's worth, that the average age of cars on the road now is something like 11 years old. I mean, it's pretty old. And that's the average age. So a car from the 90s is not some amazing thing. And people with lower incomes, I mean, cannot afford a 2015 or 2012 or whatever the year was here, you know, brand new Jaguar or whatever, so they drive older cars and they buy older cars, and then you have to go get a new registration when you buy an older car. Why is that so suspicious?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then are we therefore taking all low-income people and making them suspicious because they buy older cars and then have to go register them?
Not at all, Your Honor. And again, we're looking at the totality of the circumstances. So were that the only factor? If Deputy Thuman said, I became suspicious because this was an old model vehicle with new registration. If that were the sole factor, I would agree, Your Honor.
I'm asking, why is that a factor at all? Because that's just, to me, that's a factor of not having a lot of money. You go and buy an older car because you got to get around.
But you add to that, Your Honor, the fact that Madrigal was driving from Mexico to Houston. So it wasn't solely the fact that it was an older model vehicle with new registration. Again, Madrigal had a Mexican driver's license. The vehicle was newly registered in McAllen. And the district court in this case, in fact, stated his own knowledge that many drug traffickers who are traveling from Mexico to Houston, and again, Mexico, as Deputy Thuman testified, is, and as it's well known, is the source of many narcotics, and Houston being the hub of distribution for many narcotics. So it's not solely the factor if we were to look at that in isolation.
But they're both really big places. I mean, there's not, Houston isn't some unique place. I mean, there's millions of people in Houston. It's a big place where a lot of things are going on, including, as you say, distribution of drugs, but then a lot of other things like, you know, legitimate businesses of all sorts. Mexico's a big place where drugs are grown, but also a great many other things happen that are perfectly legitimate. So to me, this just seems very difficult to get your arms around, because it just seems like all Mexican people then can be pulled over who are driving older trucks that are newly registered. So low-income Mexican people driving through Texas can all be pulled over and harassed for a couple of hours looking for potential drugs. That's kind of where you seem to be going with this, and it concerns me because I don't think that's appropriate.
Your Honor, that wouldn't be appropriate. And in fact, in this case, there was so much more. There was the fact that Madrigal didn't know his destination. He kind of stumbled or hesitated and said he was going to see a friend. And then when Officer Thuman asked him what was his purpose, and that question's allowed under this court's case law of Brigham and Pack, Madrigal responded that he was going to purchase a vehicle to tow back. Well, they were standing during this traffic stop and during this three-minute conversation, they were standing behind Madrigal's truck. And so Thuman immediately recognized that there was no hitch on the truck for which Madrigal could tow a vehicle back to Mexico, and he certainly wasn't pulling a trailer. And
is that another factor that we're supposed to consider? Because I don't remember you listing that earlier.
It is another factor, Your Honor, and that was at pages 281 to 283, and I believe I listed that on page 25.
Well, you know, there are other ways to tow a vehicle. A tow bar doesn't require a hitch.
A tow bar doesn't require a hitch? Well, Your Honor, these were just, again, when we don't look at each individual factor in isolation, you look at it as total. And based upon Thuman's 8 years of training and experience, four of which were drug interdiction, he had reasonable suspicion before he even went to go conduct the computer check.
But do you concede that he was wrong about the difference between taking 59 and I-10?
It certainly didn't take that
much time. It doesn't take two extra hours. Okay.
But again, you know, if we start talking about outside the record about routes to going to Austin and which route do you prefer, those routes to Austin are typically about the same. In this case, when you look at the map, it is definitely out of the way, although it did not add significant amount of time. It certainly was out of the way.
Do they have more interdiction drug stops on the other road?
Yes, Your Honor. On Highway 59, it is heavily laden with law enforcement, and drug traffickers tend to try to avoid 59 for that reason, because there are large drug interdiction.
I suppose other people do too, because they don't want to be stopped and delayed.
That could be it, Your Honor, but I don't think that many people driving from Mexico to Houston would want to add extra time to go out of their way and take a non-direct route to Houston.
But it's not really that much different. 30 minutes at the most.
You know, if you know racial profiling's going on, you don't want to be anywhere near that, do you?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If you are a person of a certain race that you think is being profiled, you don't want to be anywhere near that, do you? Particularly nowadays.
Your Honor, I know that in the 28J, Madrigal raised profiling. That wasn't raised in the motions below, and also wasn't raised in the briefing. However, the case of Lopez Moreno is cited in my brief. This court rejected a profiling argument when there was no evidence adduced below with regard to any racial profiling or any other profiling otherwise. And this court should do the same in this case.
Mexican driver's license is one of the factors we're supposed to consider. Does that lend credence to the profiling argument?
Well, I just think in this case, the registration was from McAllen and was recent. Once Officer Thuman did conduct the computer check, which he was authorized to do under this court's case law of Pack and of Brigham, once he conducted that computer check, he learned that Madrigal had prior arrests in California for manufacture of a controlled substance.
But didn't you say he had reasonable suspicion even before?
Even before, and this just added to that reasonable suspicion.
Can you distinguish the Santiago case, please?
Yes. In Santiago, this court held there was no reasonable suspicion to detain beyond a computer check or a traffic stop based solely on nervousness and conflicting statements. In the present case, of course, there was no testimony about nervousness. In fact, if the court reviews the video, Madrigal was calm, so we aren't relying upon nervousness. And with regard to conflicting statements, that's not all we have here. We have multiple red flags that were raised to Officer Thuman, and those are all the ones I've stated.
Which ones are different? Being from or near the border, that's the same. A major source of meth, which, you know, that I'm just going through the factors. Going to Atlanta with conflicting stories about how long they would be in Atlanta. I'm just trying to figure out what do you have that was not in that case?
Sure, Your Honor. In this case, such as the cases that I cited in my 28J letter, we have the location of the stop, the driver's inconsistent statements, his travel plans, the travel pattern, his recent travel to and from Mexico.
Those seem exactly the same, except it's Atlanta instead of Houston. What's different about your case that makes your case one that the government wins, and Santiago the one the government
wins? Sure, Your Honor. Santiago was a case decided in 2002, as were the other cases that are distinguishable that were cited by defense counsel, and those were the cases of Dortch, Chavez Villarreal, Jones, Santiago, and Macias. All but Macias are fairly old cases, and this court decided United States versus Pack subsequent to that, and also decided United States versus Brigham, and Brigham was an en banc decision. In those cases, those also had similar facts to the present case, and such as the cases in my 28J that I've just referred to, those are very recent cases within the past year in which this court has found reasonable suspicion based upon...
What's the strongest element of your case here?
Once the computer check was conducted, even, and again, this was authorized because this court has held in United States versus PAC, the computer check is part of the traffic stop. The determination that Madrigal had been arrested previously for a drug conviction.
Let me ask you: Are those reports always accurate? That it's only an arrest and it's not a conviction, or do they report convictions when it's a conviction?
That I'm not sure with regard to this California statute or California arrest. However, as this court has noted, Deputy Thuman needed only to have reasonable suspicion, and that was articulable. It didn't need to be probable cause. It didn't need to be beyond a reasonable doubt. So Officer Thuman was authorized to rely upon that arrest record. Whether or not there was a conviction, I don't think he learned that. I don't think the record was developed with regard to whether there was ultimately a conviction.
14 years old.
It was 14 years old, Your Honor, but in that same computer check, Officer Thuman determined that there had been multiple border crossings between Mexico and Texas with this old truck with the new registration. And so when the court looks at the entire circumstances and all of these factors as a whole, and given this court's recent cases as submitted in my 28J, as well as the Pat case and the Brigham case, there was sufficient reasonable suspicion.
But doesn't Rodriguez kind of suggest a greater concern by the Supreme Court in these cases? Because it used to kind of be, well, you know, if it was just an extra minute or two, cares and whatever, and the Supreme Court has now said very clearly, no, we're not going to let these traffic stops turn into full-blown, you know, searches of everything under the sun. It's not directly addressing what are the factors per se that we have here, but to me it seems a very clear statement that these traffic stops need to be directed to the traffic violation, conducted briefly, you send them on their way with a ticket, unless reasonable suspicion is developed at that time. And doesn't that seem to be a rather exclamation point on that?
Your Honor, it does. And in fact, this circuit has always complied with that same law. So the issuance by the Supreme Court of Rodriguez versus United States hasn't changed anything in this circuit. This circuit has always held that after the initial traffic stop, once that is concluded, it must end after the computer check. But this court has always held, and has stated so in my brief at page 22 or 25, that this court has always held that absent reasonable suspicion, you can't detain a defendant or prolong the detention. What? However, if there is reasonable suspicion, this court has always said, especially with regard to this court's opinion in Brigham, that the officer can just temporarily prolong the detention in order to confirm or dispel the reasonable suspicion that was developed during the initiation of the traffic stop. So this court's case law is supported by Rodriguez, and Rodriguez did not change anything of the landscape within this court's case law. And this court recently held in United States versus Pena Gonzalez just this last month in a footnote that the issuance of the Rodriguez opinion did not change the landscape of the law in the Fifth Circuit, because although other circuits had said that there was this de minimis exception, where in other circuits they had held that it was okay to prolong the detention even for a short period of time in order to conduct a dog sniff or have pose additional questions. This court had never held that before.
Okay, I'm having just a little difficulty with, it seems to me that you've said that our case law has gotten easier over time, something to the effect that, well, those are older cases, but the new cases, you know, that Santiago may be like that, but we have some other cases that are newer in time. Unless the en banc case said that we were changing the law, which I don't think you've said, you've cited the en banc case, but you haven't said that that was a change in the law, then the cases that are prior to the en banc are the older precedent on the point that we have to follow. And I know it's a factual basis and there could be different facts and distinguishable, but it seems to me that you said that, oh, well, you should look at the new cases and not the old cases. Can you clarify that for me, what you're trying to say there?
I certainly will, Your Honor. With the issuance of Brigham, which was en banc, and the issuance of Pack, when you read Pack, and again, there was a subsequent correction in Pack, but when you look at Pack, this court began to distinguish all of these factors in Dortch, Chavez-Bureau, Jones, Santiago, and in fact, in some cases, there's like an abrogation recognized and of these older cases. And the difference is, and in Pack, the case cited by my brief, there was a correction to say, while this court did not directly overrule Dortch and its progeny, these other cases I've listed, Chavez-Real, Jones, and Santiago, while it didn't abrogate it, certainly this court has distinguished the facts and some of the law in those older cases, and that is why I'm primarily relying on the newer cases cited in my 28J.
But you understand that we're bound by the older cases unless we specifically changed them en banc.
I do, Your Honor, and that's why I'm distinguishing the facts in the present case that rose to reasonable suspicion versus the facts in some of those prior cases. Again, Dortch, the court was solely looking at inconsistent statements. In Chavez-Real, there was an illegal stop altogether, in other words, the initiation of the stop. In Jones, there were questions posed with regard to employment, the defendant's job.
Chavez-Villarreal, I apologize, my Spanish is not, is abysmal. I thought that that case held that it was not probative that the car was old, that that's not even one of the factors to consider in the totality. Am I wrong on that? I could be.
In that case, I don't recall. I want to say in that case it might have been the alien smuggling. I'm not sure if those were the facts.
The older model Chevrolet Suburban case.
Okay. That I don't recall, but I will say beyond just the fact that this was an old model vehicle, we had those multiple other factors that I've listed. Also, this court, and as well as the Supreme Court, has stated there may be innocent reasons for travel, there may be innocent reasons for certain conduct, but just as the Supreme Court held in Terry Stop, just because some conduct may be innocent, you don't look at that in a vacuum. In Terry, it was casing, it was people walking back and forth between a window.
And the time is about to run out, yes, so I want to make sure. Do you believe that we're bound on any clearly erroneous points? I mean, that often helps the government in these suppression hearing cases, that the court made some findings that we would have to find clearly erroneous. Do you agree with your opposing counsel that there's nothing that's a fact finding that would help you here?
Your Honor, in this case, the court did rely on some of its own knowledge in the Southern District of Texas when it stated its conclusion. And he also recognized as some of the factors that Magical didn't know where he was going.
Is the judge allowed to be a witness in the case on how things go in South Texas? I mean, is that an appropriate area of judicial notice for a judge to take?
Right. An appropriate area is that...
Certainly the number of miles between X and Y is a matter of judicial notice, but kind of how things go in McAllen strikes me as not really a judicial notice point. And is that really something a district judge should be sort of making themselves a witness on?
Your Honor, I see my time is up. May I answer the question?
Yeah, answer it.
Thank you. This court does give due weight to inferences drawn from facts by resident judges and local law enforcement officers.
Well, but the general rule is we review de novo a denial of a...
Yes, Your Honor. The court will review de novo the law and for clear error the facts. And this
court... What are the facts here now?
The court does have...
What are the facts that the judge decided that we would give deference to?
I see. The fact that Madrigal did not know where he was going in Houston, that he was not familiar with Houston.
We've got the audio on that. We know what he said.
Yes, that was on page...
What disputed fact did the judge find that we would need to give credence to that's a subject of dispute?
Right, there were no disputed
facts. Okay, so this is a question of law.
It is.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Landau.
Well, one lawyer's old case is another lawyer's longstanding precedent.
Well, I don't know that I consider 2002 all that old, but what do you make of Brigham? Because the argument is that's an intervening en banc, and so we have to follow that to the extent there's an inconsistency.
I don't think it matters, Your Honor, because as I read Brigham, it sort of lopped off a portion of Dortch on which I am not relying. Pack, however, has bigger problems. Pack is a creature of the case that was brought to the court. The issue in the appeal was whether or not there was reasonable suspicion, but Pack never actually addressed that issue. It wasn't briefed. So to put so much faith in Pack and what factors are present there or not present there doesn't really help us in this case because that issue was not properly presented to the court. Moreover, I think Rodriguez does some serious damage to Pack, which said that the speeding infraction had concluded, the detention for a drug-sniffing dog lasted no more than 35 minutes after the initial stop. That sure sounds a lot like Rodriguez to me, so I'm not sure Pack is even still standing after Rodriguez. And I think in Santiago as well,
it would have been 10 minutes for the dog. You can't bring the dog in at that point if there's not a reason to, right?
5 minutes.
Yeah.
10 seconds.
I think there's a real bright line rule after Rodriguez. For better or for worse, it makes it easy for us to figure out where that line is. Computer check done, we're done.
Well, here the computer check that we're looking to is the one that found the arrest because the officer's allowed to look for outstanding warrants, and in that outstanding warrant check was also the arrest.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's like at 8 minutes, 30 seconds into it. So that's a line that you would agree up until that point, whatever was developed is fair game for consideration of reasonable suspicion.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
After that, we argued insufficient
right.
to follow up.
So then if he did lie about California and all that, you're saying we shouldn't look at that.
Correct.
Okay.
Seeking consent, lying about.
To me, it doesn't seem like he did lie. He said he didn't know, and then he said he was in jail. So,
I'm not sure he did lie, Your Honor, but that was what the district court relied on, so I'm phrasing it in that way. But in Santiago, it wasn't just nervousness. The defendant in Santiago was from Santa Ana, which is a drug source, and headed to Atlanta, which is a drug destination, which sounds a lot like our case. There were conflicting stories in Santiago. All of that put together was insufficient, and that really sounds a lot like the case that we have here.
It's like every major city is a drug distribution network.
I'm never going to get on the road again.
I mean, there you go.
I live in a drug destination. I can't go anywhere without being pulled over. And I think that's a concern here. I mean, the rights of innocent motorists are vindicated on the back of people like Mr. Madrigal. And just to clarify what my argument is about the profile, there is a racial profiling issue which is not raised. We're just talking about that in the context of the argument. My argument, which is raised by the reasonable suspicion issue, is whether these sort of general profiling factors, the old car with the new registration, I heard that radio story as well. So many cars are old. Is this all reasonable suspicion to detain people if you get pulled over for speeding or following?
Well, and to be fair, I'm not going to base a ruling on what I heard on the radio, but the point is that the record doesn't reflect that there's something unusual about old cars, that's just a very unusual fact. And so the normal course is that there are old cars on the road, and again, low-income people, often that's what they can afford and so on, and there's nothing, you know,
nefarious
about. So I don't want you thinking I'm going to base a ruling based on what I heard on the radio. It just simply illustrates the point that older cars are still on the road and running hard.
And it's nothing that takes out the innocent motorists from the non-innocent motorists. And
right.
That's why these
not a distinguishing feature.
Correct, Your Honor. And there's nothing that in these factors, aside from Mr. Madrigal's confusion about where he was going, that really is specific to him. And that factor isn't specific to illegal activity. It's just suspicion. So to the extent that we're arguing about profiling, it's not the racial profiling. It's this sort of drug trafficker, alien smuggler profiling they're so broad as to be not probative in this case. And I think we need to look at also the wider context of this stop. This is a stop where Mr. Madrigal was never told why he was pulled over. It was a drug interdiction from the beginning. He never got a ticket. He was never warned. There was no discussion about following too closely. It was always a drug case. And to that extent, that should go to the purpose and flagrancy and the connection between the stop and the consent that ensued later. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, counsel. We have your case. And we